As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on The Times radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, welcome back. Newcastle are as near as done. Worcester survive. Anthony Watson is back, and praise be, so is Alex Lowe, who's been out of the game almost as long. I'm Owen Slott, and as if that isn't enough, Ben Ryan is here with us, having reinvented rugby. Also with us is Chris Jones, who was around when the game was invented. One by one, that's Ben Ryan, who took Fiji to gold in the Rio Olympics. Ben, not satisfied with having mastered one form of the short game of rugby, you've just pioneered what you're calling the T20 of rugby. You feel rugby needed a new version for its survival?
I think that Rugby X is going to provide more young supporters, and certainly for the Sevens game is going to really increase the salaries available for those players.
OK, so Rugby X, we're going to have a proper conversation about this new form of the game a bit later on. Chris Jones, always great to have you on. We always feel obliged to ask again, when was it that you covered your first rugby match, Chris?
Well, look, can I just say, I'm really looking forward to talking about X-rated rugby with Ben, because I know there's been a lot about that lately, and I'm sure it's going to be really popular with the public. Everybody likes to get into an X, don't they?
He's got a wrong impression here. Ben, you've got to redesign your X-rated rugby.
I'd just like to say that my first women's game I covered was 1979. When the ladies of Magor in the lovely county of Gwent took on a team of Americans who were bigger, stronger, and gave them a good whooping. So, yeah, it's been some time I've been involved with the oval-shaped ball.
Well done. And Alex Lowe, how old were you when Chris covered his first game?
Oh, my goodness. I was not even... What's the line from Blackadder? Not even a glint in the milkman's eye.
So there we are, a podcast for every generation. Good to have you here, gents. I think we need to talk about the Premiership from top to bottom, because there's stories all the way through. A lot's happened over a very interesting weekend. So I'm going to start at the very top, and then we're going to get stuck on fourth spot. And then we're going to talk about Worcester, Leicester, what on earth is their problem, and Newcastle. If you're going to pull the team apart, who would you want to take home with you? Right, so let's start at the top. We have merrily discussed the Premiership this season as the most exciting Premiership of all time since it started. Is that actually a fallacy, given that we've known from very early on that Saracens and Exeter were going to qualify 1 and 2? They both now got the home semi-final sewn up. Is it a brilliant Premiership? And further to that, is it right that we're going to go into semi-final playoffs, which would distort what the Premiership has told us this season, that two teams are easily the best and everyone else is playing catch-up?
It's been a fantastic Premiership if you're not in the top three, because below top three has been brilliant. Every time you go to a game, something ridiculous happens. I was at Leicester against Bristol. You know, who would have thought that Bristol, you know, would go to Leicester and play like that and come away with a win? I mean, they've never done the double over Leicester. And this is a season where Leicester are just unrecognisable. And you couldn't have said that at the start of the year. You know, look at their squad. OK, half is injured now, but you know, Leicester have dropped like a stone. It's only lucky to them that Newcastle have dropped even further. But that whole grouping of Northampton, Quinn, Sale, Wasps, Bath, you know, and even Bristol now, it's really, really interesting, because, you know, how are Wasps hanging in there? Haven't they been having an appalling run recently?
They seem to have a good game, do they?
And they're in seventh place. Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's just remarkable. Northampton, I'm really impressed with the way that Chris has come over and done the New Zealand thing to them, and they've got they're playing nice
so
rugby.
You first name terms with them.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. And that's Chris Boyd, by the way.
Yeah, and Boydie. And yeah, bigger playing great rugby. Great to see a lot of youngsters coming into this squad. It's been they've been when they destroyed Sale. It was you know Steve Diamond, who's usually got a lot to say. Steve just said, "Look, Steve is just said." Dimes, sorry, said, what can I say? Everything went wrong. They were just too good for us. And that is why I think, just to preempt this fourth, I think Northampton will finish fourth.
Chris, do you find it hard reporting on the Premiership when you're on first name terms with everyone? Sometimes you've got to deliver bad news and strong opinions.
I know, but if you deliver it with a ludicrously stupid nickname, it does help.
Okay. From Boydie to Ben, do you think we should that it's right to have playoffs this season when Exeter and Saracens are way ahead? It's a function to make the Premiership remain interesting when we know who the two best teams are.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess it's been set out as playoffs, and so you could argue that you know teams are planning towards that and not you know necessarily they're finishing positions in the top four. You know, I remember the very first time it happened with Gloucester winning the league, but it was actually you know that the others had planned for playoffs. So yeah, I mean I'm seeing Quinns go, you know, I think they've done brilliantly this year with Guzzi coming in and having a few changes.
Come on now.
I shall continue.
Alex, we go to you in a minute. I want you to. I want a bigger name drop.
So what? This weekend they've got. Is it Tigers? So I can imagine they'll get 5 points out of that, and then they'll go down to the last game of the season, where they're playing Wasps. Whereas I think what Saints have got Worcester. I imagine Worcester will be, you know, half.
On the beach.
Yeah, pretty much. And then their last game of the season is an interesting one against Bath. Is that right, Northampton?
Exeter away.
Sorry. So yeah. So what they're gonna again? Exeter? Are they gonna have you know held back a few players because they know where they are the following week? So you can't look at that purely on form where those two games are going to go for both of those teams. And because it's nip and tuck, you can't really call that one. But I do know Quinns have certainly you've seen a real upturn in their fortunes. And I think they've done well. I think Sale are out of the equation. So it's those two for me.
I think it's. Your question is it the most exciting league because the top two's sewn up? I mean, in some ways, you've got in Saracens, in Smalley's Saracens, one of the.
Very nice.
One of the great club teams of the modern era. For all the controversies that have affected or hit that club in the last few months, they're one hell of a team. And it is brilliant to watch them play. But below them, there's just a myriad storylines everywhere from, you know, from Newcastle falling from fourth to bottom, from Leicester falling all the way down to, you know, they're still not safe technically now, two rounds from the end, to that big group in the middle that Chris was just talking about, all of whom can, you know, have still got a lot to play for, the resurgence of Quinns. I just think it's been a brilliant season because there's just so much to look at, even though we're not actually really discussing the top two very much because until we get to the Premiership final, we pretty much know what they're going to be.
Can we sort of part that conversation, can't we? Just have it on the last day. Okay, so fourth place, as we've said, so Northampton, Quinns, Sale, Wasps, Bath and Bristol. There's 6 points between them. They could all get that that fourth place in the playoffs. So let's go from right to left. Who do we think is going to get that fourth spot?
Well, I think Chris? Northampton will get it just because I think Worcester will be on the beach now and they're just so happy to have stayed up. And Exeter, as Ben said, you know, there'll be a great opportunity for Rob Baxter to just say, look, park the best 15, the rest of you lads, come on, let's just play this match, which I'm sure the other teams in that central area will be very annoyed about. But, you know, it's a sensible thing to do going into the playoffs. And I agree, Quinns under Guzzi have been fantastic, haven't they? In terms of, you know, he's been seen as, okay, he's a defence coach. But, you know, their attack has been great as well. And they've lost some key players. I mean, Joe Martin has been seen for weeks because of injury. And they've lost wings all the time. So to continue doing what they're doing. And also, you know, as we saw in the match against Exeter, you know, they've taken the game to a new level. I mean, it was completely unacceptable what happened involving Joe Marler and Nick White. I mean, Nick White was just trying to arrange, right, to get that ruck sorted, and he's verbally abused. verbally abused by a front row forward. The referee had a duty to stop the game and threaten a yellow card to Joe Marler for use of that language. That was totally unacceptable. Does he know how difficult it is to arrange one of those caterpillars to get all those forwards in a row and then be able to kick away? And you've got some numpty of the front row swearing at you. I mean, what is this game coming to?
I think you're being a bit harsh on your friend Whitey there, aren't you?
He's been called up in the Australian squad, isn't he?
Yeah, he's going back home. Yeah. I'm not sure his conga was quite long enough.
I was saying exactly the same to the TV. So yeah. It just drives me insane building those.
If anyone's confused about Jonesy's tirade just now, it takes on average for about 1.5 minutes for a scrum half to pick the ball out of a ruck and put up a predictable box kick. And I think between us, we agree that that's too long.
Yeah.
Alex, who's going to come forth?
Wouldn't you like to see a sort of 13-man
conga? Okay, all right, you've done it now. You've done that now.
Just see how far you can go back. Because you'd start outside the 22 and go all the way back into the 22. You wouldn't be able to kick straight to catch, you see. Yeah. It's taking the game to a new level. You should think about this for ex-rugby.
Okay, listen. Okay, you're on a roll here, Chris. Which scrum half takes the longest to put up the box kick?
Which takes the longest?
Yeah.
Well, I think Danny Kerr, when he's fit, he likes to have a good look and a think about it. But I understand he's going to be back next weekend, which is great news for England because they need a few scrum halves.
Yeah, all right. But we're just on the conga now. He's the slowest box kicker.
I think so because he likes to have a look around.
Okay, Alex, I'm trying to get an answer out of you. Who's coming forth?
Harlequins. I mean, Danny Kerr's comeback will help. I think some of their big players are playing well, and if you just look at the fixtures. If Jones is saying Northampton based on what Exeter might do in selection, Harlequins have got Leicester at home, Wasps away. I think that's two wins for them, and in which case I don't see anyone.
But Leicester need something, don't they? So they're not going to give up.
Leicester needed something every week for the last half year.
Wasps are so predictable, aren't they? At the moment.
You just don't know. I think Quins are the best place.
I'm marginally with you on Quins because I don't know. I don't know what you can expect from Exeter in that last game, because are they really going to want to lose their last game before going into a playoff? Surely they want a bit of momentum. I know, Ben.
If they go easy, then they'll play Saints again, probably 1-4, 2-3, won't they? So yeah. It'll be yes. Also they might fancy Saints over Quins. Who knows? They might prefer that. They'll have a look at that and see what the various strengths are. See that Quins have got some boys coming back fit, like Danny. I know that they within the laws, they might put a weakened team in against Exeter, against Saints, allow them to get the points and come forth. Because that is not, they're not breaking the rules there. I don't agree with it, but
they're playing Saracens. Exeter playing Saracens.
Yeah.
So I don't think I don't think it's in Baxter's makeup, but I don't think they're going to want to go into the playoffs having potentially lost at Saracens and then lost at home to Northampton.
No, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I doubt they'll go full ball in both those games.
Sarries will rest their best team this weekend, won't they? Because they got the European final the following weekend. Yeah. So Exeter will be able to give Sarries a bloody nose on one weekend. I know. So Ben, all right. If you had to be one team, who would it be?
I think again. I think Quins could well get maximum points in the next two games. It might still not be enough, and I think they'll look back at that 19-20 defeat to Saints that they could easily have won.
They had a big long lead in that, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. Yeah. So that's the game that they'll if they don't manage it, they'll go. That's the one that got away really. But whatever happens, they have had a very good season.
My son was working in the bars on that game at Stoop for Harlequin's defeat, so I don't know if that's got anything to do with it, but just thought I'd throw that in.
It's a bit of colour
to the podcast. Which of anyone, Gloucester or any of the aforementioned, do you think could produce an upset in a semi-final? General silence and shaking your heads?
Well, look, Gloucester have got, obviously, Cipriani.
And Gloucester did beat Exeter in the Europe.
If they play off him like they can do at times, Gloucester have been really nice to watch. And they've got with Mustard in the second row, they're guaranteed they've got a fantastic line out. The scrum's solid. And Pelledri's playing himself back into some form after his terrible injury. They're a dangerous side. Ben, shutting him down is something that teams do, and we saw that a bit on the Worcester game.
In the Worcester game, I was looking at that and thinking, I wonder if they just they could have, because they obviously were targeting Danny, and I just wondered whether they could have just slipped in 12 trees at 10 for 10 minutes and moved Danny to 12 and just upset then Worcester's plans around that, and then reverted back, because they've got that in their game. They could do that. Billy's played at 10 and just would have been quite interesting with the patterns they were, but they didn't. They stuck with how they did it. But I could see that happening in the future. If they're now reviewing these tapes, I could see Billy and Danny having a little chat with each other and going, we could have just mixed that up a little bit, and that would have solved us some of our problems, because they have got and I think Quinns as well have got, you know, they've got the A game. When they hit their form, they've got some players that can cause some real problems. I think the semi-finals could be pretty interesting. They're obviously heavily weighted in front of the top two, but they're not a write-off for the others.
Do you think, Ben, I was interested in what Rob Baxter said after the Exeter marginal victory at the weekend. He was referring to the fact that Exeter, they've been top for so long, they've had their qualification for the semi-finals assured for so long, and then they've had long been assured at home home draw in the semi-finals. So they have had a long period where they haven't had anything really to play for. He said we're in an emotional vacuum, and that, I think that vacuum is about 5 or 6 weeks or something, so between the last game that really properly counted and the semi-final. I mean, is that something that you could empathise with as a coach, that it would be hard to get your players back on edge after a period like that?
I think it's great that he's shown that awareness, that he actually understands that that's where they are. And I think their planning's always been very good at Exeter, and they have got the upper hand because of exactly what you just said. You know, they've got all that time to be able to know exactly where they're going to be in the semi-finals of a home game. All that really the variable is who they're going to play against. And I think for them, they'll get that right. I think their conditioning coaches there are excellent. They'll get them peaking exactly right for those semis in the finals. And they don't have, I'm sure they'd probably want to have, but they don't have Europe as well in their rearview mirror that Saracens have. So for me, they are the favourites to win the Premiership. But I do see some twists and turns. And you can see with, you know, firm ground and sunshine on the backs, both Gloucester and Quinns and possibly Saints, if they're in the top four, causing upset.
I remember years ago when Exeter came up, the way he structured his season, he put in like a second pre-season midway through, almost to give them a kickstart again to then push up and then win the playoffs. Mm. From a coaching perspective, to be in that emotional vacuum where actually you don't need your players to go to the well every week, they don't need to stress themselves out and they have no pressure on their shoulders. Is that not the perfect scenario for a coach to almost have a preparation camp for the playoffs, that they can they're playing matches, but everything can now be geared up to preparing for,
as long as when they get to those semi-finals that your players don't, they're suddenly not, there's been a vacuum in intensity that's
the danger, you know, isn't it?
I mean, I remember years ago when I think it was Bath that qualified really early for the playoff finals, and it gave them they had a week off, they had nothing to do, and they ended up playing, when I was at Newbury, they played Newbury, you know, that was all they could find, the team they could find to play, you know, and thumped us, and it didn't really give them enough of intensity of workout, and they lost in the final. And so they've got, but the thing is, they'll be aware of it. They've got to get that intensity ready to go into that semi-final, however they get that. But what they will have is they'll have the choice of the players that they want, and they'll be able to rest, and what we call a stress cycle. They'll create these stress cycles where they have like a 3 or 4 week program that will slowly ramp up towards, with a bit of tapering, ramp up towards the semi-final, then they'll have a mini one again in the before the final. So they, all the advantages in their planning, and you know, to my mind, they've got the brains there to get their planning right.
I'd say that's all right for them to have a stress cycle like that, isn't it? I mean, here on the podcast, we have to perform every week, and we suffer and bleed for it.
I'd like to take over the role of the Rob Baxter role, then, because what's great about Rob Baxter is he tells it as is. There's no sort of smoke and mirrors. He'll tell you that his players are in some kind of vacuum and they've got to get out of it, and he'll be telling the players exactly the same thing. There's no, you know, there's no extraneous stuff. He just tells it straight. It's great to hear from somebody at the top of the league who doesn't do a football manager's rubbish speak. He tells it as it is. He's not happy with the players. He thinks he knows where they are, and he'll get them out of it. And more power to him. It's great to hear.
Salary and give him England part time next year as well. Be all right then. Do his full time job at Exeter and do England on the side.
Jesus, you put that out there from nowhere.
Yeah, just
absolutely from nowhere. He's just named the next England coach.
And he can bring it. Yes, well, sounds perfect.
Okay. We can't just let that go.
Would that be your solution? Is that due to the RFU's lack of funds? They can't actually afford a full-time coach.
Well, no. Look, I mean, you want to be like, we go back to this intensity. You do need your week in, week out, and England coaches don't get that. You know, they pop it, have these windows of play, like the November International Six Nations and World Cup. That's it. Whereas Premiership's week in, week out, and you get blunt very quickly as a head coach.
That's interesting. Do you think that may be why Eddie is so intense and seemingly at the peak of his stress cycle during every England campaign? Because he has to peak for every time. It maybe if he had a more week in, week out, then he would be...
Well, it's a bit like when you go into pre-season as a player, or if you're a coach, you know, the coaches have had all summer to think about how they're going to change things around, do things, and they're so excited in that first week, and there's all sorts of new posters up in the changing rooms and all this new kit and cones and gear, and they go,
a new quote to put
yeah, and it's all that, and it's suddenly it's just everyone gets so excited, because they've been away from it for so long, and it's a bit like that with international rugby. You don't get them, you have too much time to over plan things, whereas you get into routines and you can stress out, and you can you know exactly what your program's going to be with it for Exeter, with the exception that then you've got this really nice challenge of playoffs and Europe to play around with as well. So yeah, I mean, it's a completely different kettle of fish.
But Ben, without wishing to sort of do a whole sort of debate on this, have you just told us who you think should be the next England coach?
We've all seen Rob Baxter in action. Like he's like you say, like Chris, he says it as it is. He's got the, you know, he's built up a team to you know, based around, you know, English players often and with an English coaching staff, and they've done a brilliant job. I just don't think there's any harm in, if you think there's the best person perhaps doesn't want to leave his job, well, maybe there's an opportunity to have these people involved in the systems without actually just taking them totally away from what's created why they're so good in the first place.
Is it, as you say, he's built at Leicester a culture and a successful team over over a long period of time.
Leicester, yeah.
Does that qualify you to then deliver in those short, high stress periods with England, where you don't have the players week in, week out? You can't build that same culture in the same way, because that one of the arguments against selecting a Premiership coach for England is it's actually a different skill set or a different job, or can you convert what you do over 10 years at club level, whether you're Mark McCall or Rob Baxter, into an England setup where you may have a 4-year cycle, but actually only have the players for three windows a year?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. So the question: if you're a good Premiership coach, does that and you win everything at Premiership level, does that mean that you can make the step up to international level? Well, there's no reason why you shouldn't, because if anything, you're reducing that intensity, and you get those pockets of intense games. The other way around is an interesting one. Can you go from international coach, where you only have that short time frame where you can kind of like be overly animated and fairly, you know, dictatorial to your players? That won't work over a year with a team week in, week out. You'll soon get bounced back from players and from staff if you treat them like that. So I think there's no reason why, you know, you earn your stripes at Premiership, why shouldn't you be good enough to be an international coach? There's absolutely no reason why that couldn't be the case.
Unless you take a job which involves you having to redesign the entire domestic rugby format of a country like Conor O'Shea had to do at Italy while trying to win international matches. I mean, that, what a job to take on. That, yeah. Blimey.
But then Conor should never be discussed in the same terms as all the other international head coaches, because his job spec's totally different.
Yeah, absolutely.
Totally different. He deals with it admirably when often they look at him and the results of the first team, but then you have to see everything else that he's done underneath.
That's been amazing.
Yeah.
Done with the franchises.
But England, you know, for example, it's just the first team, isn't it? Eddie has nothing to do with age group development, anything else. It's purely that. Whereas, you know, the Premiership, you know, some of them have that same remit, but very few of them. And someone like Baxter casts his eye across the whole club, you know, as you should, as would McCall.
Yeah, his sort of personality and character sort of towers over the whole thing, doesn't it? And that's one of the reasons why they are where they are. Okay, Alex, where were you at the weekend?
I was at Worcester against Gloucester on Sunday,
and that went well for them.
Yeah, it went very well for them. I had them as my tip to go down.
Me too.
And I don't think anyone would have seen Newcastle falling as far as they did. But actually, I've been really impressed with them recently. They've even the games they've lost, they managed to eke out losing bonus points. And I thought on Sunday they were really, really good against a Gloucester team who do have the weapons to beat them, as we've just said. Francois Houhard at scrum half was just magnificent. Duncan Weir's been revitalised by going there. I remember I saw them earlier this season. He was against Leicester at a time before Leicester really, really slumped, and he was sensational that day, and he was really good again on Sunday. They're just playing with a spirit and a belief that hasn't always been there. There's a confidence flowing through them, and Alan Solomons was... There were a few eyebrows raised when he got the job there. His track record hadn't been brilliant in this part of the world. He hasn't brought something to that team, and I thought they were very good.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
I was going to suggest a talking point of Duncan Weir as best signing of the season, but then if you look across the tens that the Premiership clubs have signed, then there's some quite tough competition there, because Danny Cipriani is arguably the signing of the season, Dan Biggar is arguably the signing of the season. Which is the best ten that's come in out of those three?
I think, you know, for what Biggar's given that team, I mean, he gives them shape, he gives them a tactical nous, he gets them into the right position. And I think he's enjoying it. He's talked about, you know, small, silly things like going to the supermarket and not getting verbally abused. Well, that's because Joe Marler's not in there saying, look, I wouldn't stack those cans in that row, just pull them in your bag. Look,
do you not have a nickname for Joe Marler? I mean, you called him Joe Marler twice now, wouldn't that?
I wouldn't dare.
Joey or...
I wouldn't dare. I think that Dan's earned every single pound he's paid by Northampton, who've used him in the right way, which patently didn't do with George North. They failed appallingly to use him as much as they could have done. But with Biggar, I think he's given him a fantastic shape. Yes, Cipriani going to Gloucester, but we knew that wherever Danny went, he would create this ability to play in a certain way, as he says himself, with the golden wrists. You know, you can't help but play good rugby. But I think Biggar, you know, coming out of Wales, putting himself at Northampton, you know, who were going that well. And they, you know, a new director of rugby, Chris, came in, did this good stuff. And I think he's just done really well. I think he's helped those younger players really understand how to play the game. And they've got some great young backs there now, really are, who are hungry to play.
The exception to the successful new 10 thing is Liba Sopoanga at Wasps, who doesn't seem to have cracked it yet. Is that going to be a second season thing, or is he just been sort of dragged down a bit by a whole Wasp team that has really struggled to find their feet this season?
My sense is a bit of both. He talked from the moment he got here about the physicality and the different style of rugby.
As if it was a surprise, but
I think sometimes when they don't watch that much Premiership rugby in New Zealand as we've discovered through this season.
Down their noses at it, don't
they? Yeah, Fekitoa. Chris Ashton revealed that Fekitoa didn't even know what the European Cup was when he moved to Toulon. So they sort of hear of this style of rugby, but they don't watch it very much. And I think he was slightly taken aback by that, and he hasn't settled into the style of rugby that we know he can play. He has also been hampered by the fact that Wasps have been struggling and they haven't had Jimmy Gopeth.
Yeah,
I think that's almost the single biggest factor. That they got rid of Cipriani, who did dovetail brilliantly with Jimmy Gopeth. Sopoanga should have been able to to fill in that role. He's a class player. But without Gopeth beside him, they've really struggled.
Okay, biggest mistake by any DOR from last season to this? Letting Cipriani go. At the time, no one wanted him. Gloucester picked him up almost off the scrap heap, didn't they?
Yeah, on the cheap. I think so, yeah.
Well, Wasps has been a very strange story all season, haven't they? Because you look at their best team out, if they weren't all injured, and you say, well, it's a really good-looking side. But remove Gopeth and suddenly they're looking in the midfield like they have no direction. They don't have that way they were playing last year, which was really sort of challenging defences. And, you know, funnily enough, Fekete will know about the Premiership next year, won't he? Because he's going to be standing alongside Subhanger going, mate, what's all this about?
Yeah, he'll help.
And hopefully that with Gopeth, that could change it again. And suddenly Dye won't be under so much pressure, because Benny has been under pressure, hasn't he?
That back line, they've got a good back line, but without Cipriani, Gopeth and Christian Wade, just, you know, three massive attacking weapons that they didn't have this season. And Goff of his back now, you know, he's back playing, and they'll have a revival next year purely because of that. But
Sopwanga has brought in one of the most of a cheerful Twitter accounts into English rugby, isn't he? Which, you know, that's something.
But your question on Weir, I think, you know, the signing of the season, we know what Cipriani can do, and Gloucester have allowed him to do it. We know what Dabiga can do, and he's made a big impact. But in terms of from looking at it from the individual, Weir's career was sort of drifting, and his form for Worcester's got him back into the Scotland frame again. And he's been sort of down the bottom of the league, but he's pulled off some big performances in big games, and that partnership with Francois Hugard is really, really exciting to watch.
Okay, good. Right. So I don't think anyone's going to argue that Newcastle are highly likely to go down. It already appears that Mark Wilson might leave on loan for the season, which helped bring down their salaries a little bit. If you could poach another player from Newcastle, who would you take?
Well, I mean, it does depend on where you're taking them to. Because, you know, you look at that Newcastle side, that it's full of Premiership quality players. You know, I mean, whether you need a Toby Flood to come into your setup at 10, he'll still do a job for any of the Premiership. Most of their back row, whether it's Nangusa, Graham, Welsh, Hardy, they're all quality players. And then you've got you've got Nicky Gonover or Sinotti on the wings. That again, like they're
tackler at scrum half. I think he's wonderful.
And then he's had a fantastic season at fullback, but you'd have to bring him into the right sort of team.
Yeah. I've written all those down. Callum Green's already heading off to Leicester. I thought of it from the perspective of you. We all know that Sinotti could light up any pitch and slot into any team. A player who's perhaps underappreciated because he's at Newcastle, a bit like Ryan Mills at Worcester, is Johnny Williams, who I think is a class player. And actually, if you put him in a top six team, you'd actually see the best of him. A bit like, I think if Ryan Mills played in the Saracens team, he'd be as effective as Nick Tompkins is, and people would be talking about him in a completely different way. And so if I was a DOR looking to cherry pick someone from Newcastle who we don't already know about, I'd go with Johnny Williams.
And you've got those two younger wingers underneath. Zach Kilbriggy is very talented, and he's got 24, 25. Adam Radwan is another young winger as well. Both those players, you know, I mean, they'll also carve up in the Championship.
Radwan's already been connected to a move to Quinns, I think, as a replacement for Nathan Earl. Christian, tell us who your favourite Newcastle player was.
Well, I was going to say Johnny Williams because we saw him at London Irish. Thought this guy's got real ability. He can break the line. He's got real pace. Sometimes his hands are not as fantastic. Yeah, he's playing alongside Chris Harris, who's another really hard running centre. Yeah. Their midfield is. Yeah, we go through all these things. What are they doing at the bottom of the league? It's ridiculous. But if I was going to pick one, and you want somebody just to be that special somebody, I'd go with Snotty.
Okay, that's the Premiership. We are now going to talk about how the game might change or could change, or how Ben Ryan's going to change it for the better. So the Rugby X is a new shortened version of the game, which is going to be launched in the O2 in
October 29th. It's between the semi-finals and the finals of the Rugby World Cup.
Okay, and let's go through it. So how many aside?
Five a side. So it's going to be six men's teams, four women's teams.
Yeah.
And they'll play kind of in the first session, there'll be a group stages, and then there'll be knockouts in the second sessions. Each session's 2 hours. The pitch is a full artificial, full contact indoor field that's about 34 metres by about 50.
How many minutes each game?
10.
Yeah.
So there's no, and there's no need to turn around. So it's, you know, it's 10 and
no conversions, no posts.
No conversions. Yep. You can just get rolling subs. You've got no line outs. Ball gets thrown in from the side. No kickoffs. You start again on the 10 meter line. Mm. We've obviously tested it a lot with England. They've been really good actually. And we had a test event at the O2 where we had England men's and women's sevens teams, Wasps ladies, Loughborough students to have trial games and do it all out. And with the RFU referees as well, and officials and TV and everyone. And it's good. It works. I totally understand when people, we did when RugbyX launched their social media channels on Friday, and the first person that wrote in went, "Oh, this looks shit."
I put all that work in. Yeah,
yeah, I mean, you're obviously going to get people that just don't like change and also just read the headlines. And I'm, and it's like, yeah, I get that. But if you just dig a little bit deeper into it and see, A, we're trying to attract younger fans. And if you look at who's the profile of people going to Twickenham, A, the tickets are expensive. Mm. B, they're older. They're getting older. And so are the sponsors that we're bringing in, whether that's insurers. And if in, 10 years we've got...
Old Mutual Wealth.
Well, it'll be funeral directors in a decade. You have to shake it up. And you have to, you have to have a package of the game that's alluring to youngsters and short-sighted, shorter versions of the game. So, and cheaper tickets. And to go somewhere like the O2, that's an amazing, it's a really cool venue to play rugby in. I think we'll attract that. And as a result of that, there'll be sponsors that will come into the game that aren't currently involved in the game, because again, it's a younger crowd that will attract them. And then most of the teams are going to be sevens internationals, with one or two splatterings of other players, and I think also people don't perhaps realise that sevens international players aren't paid a huge amount of money, and at the bottom end, your Samoans, Kenyans, Fijians, Argentinians are on anything from part time wages to $5,000 or $10,000 full time. Now those guys that are playing in these world in the Rugby X are going to have all their salaries, significantly increased, and I mean significantly, by a number of digits, and that's going to mean that the best sevens players are going to be retained into the game, are going to get paid more money, and we're going to then attract a better quality of sevens player, and all of this is done in alignment with World Rugby, so that we're never going to clash on times of season and things like that.
What I want to understand, Ben, is where did this come from? I'm thinking it's not your brainchild, is it? You've been helping.
That's it, yeah. So I got involved when they started. Then TRM, who are also involved in the World League with World Rugby.
This is a sports agency.
Yeah, that's it. And
so it was their brainchild, was it?
Yeah, they talked about an indoor version of it, and then they asked me for more specifics, and then we went into the laws
Worked with TRM, and then together you went to World Rugby.
Pitched to World Rugby, and then pitched to World Rugby about it, and it's taken about 18 months, the whole process, and then.
But I would say to persuade World Rugby to do something like this and give the thumbs up to a new version of the game in 18 months. That's very, very, very quick work for them.
Yeah, I think, World Rugby like it because they see newer supporters coming in, newer potential sponsors coming in, supplementing the sevens game, and also going into new territories with indoor stadiums and the possibilities around that, and then also the grassroots possibility that it is such an easy, as an ex-teacher and someone that also works in London at the moment in some of the schools, rugby doesn't exist there. An extracurricular sport doesn't exist in most of the inner cities now. But short-sighted versions of sports,
is a really good way of reigniting that in the schools, as well as just, you know, numbers are down everywhere. And clubs, universities, schools have all contacted me about wanting to know more about Rugby X, just because they want it as another version to keep people in the game. So none of this is to try to overtake sevens or 15s. It's to help both. And obviously we want to, there's a commercial element to it. Of course there is. But ultimately, I see this as a real positive.
But the other side of it is, you think rugby needs it because, as you say, schools are struggling to provide rugby and despite the RFU's efforts, and numbers are going down.
91% of our kids go to state schools in the UK, and there's really only, you know, there's very few. There are some state schools that have a good rugby program, but there are not many of them. But I mean, you've only got to spend a few hours in any of these inner city schools, and there is no extra sport, full stop. And then often the teachers then aren't coming doing anything after school because they don't need to. And very few of those teachers have any rugby background. So there's an opportunity here. You know, basketball's on the increase, you know, seriously on the increase in the UK now, both with television picking it up on Sky, showing it, even things like, you know, the video games are really popular, and kids suddenly know everyone playing in the NBA. Basketball will, if we're not careful, and I'm a big fan of basketball, it will quickly overtake the recreational side in 10 years, and rugby will fall to the wayside. So you need to be proactive, and I think this is a move that's going to help in that respect.
Chris, what do you think of this, insofar as Ben says, you put it on social media, and you know, probably the most predictable thing of all time, that some old rugby hard nut would just go on and go, "Oh, this is shit. It's not why. It's not."
Describe the RFU council like that, but there we go. look, we know that with kids, I know the attention spans are not great for the kids.
That's
for another reason. But 10 minutes each way. Yeah, a 10 minutes match. Great TV. Yes. The big row going on about cricket, isn't it? The T20 is taking away from the county game, and you know, you're getting players who are not equipped to, you know, play a long innings at Test cricket because they are tuned into this fantastic money generating form of the game. Do you see? I'm looking at this thinking, is this the golden egg? Is always get into America. Get in America. There's all this money lying around. You just pick it up when you get there. Is this what you see as the one way? Because we know getting into the colleges is difficult. Getting into schools is difficult. They've tried really hard. The sevens are number one in the world at the moment, and they're making small steps. Is this a big step thing if you can get into America? Because of the attention span, about the sort of image you could come across on TV?
The simple version of the game, and the fact it's an indoor stadium, so you can play it anywhere across the US. And the fact that sevens at the moment, because it's, you know, it's got this weird juxtaposition of really fast 7 minute each way games, but it's over 12, 13 hour days. So, you know, it's hard to TV to package for TV to buy, to sell at good levels. And I know the World Rugby are doing a lot about trying to reduce that format and have those golden 2 hour pockets. But this provides it. I don't think it's going to be, we're ever going to, I mean, it'd be a lovely, actually, if we ever get to the point where this has become so big that it's going to even think about taking over either of those, then we've got a good problem, because it would have brought in, you know, a large chunk of people that aren't involved in it before. And there's other little interesting ripples from this. We talk a lot about being, and we're very, very aware of player welfare on this, and we've done huge amounts on this, and we're going to limit game times, and we're making sure the facilities are all good and the standards are good and the recovery, all that stuff we spent a lot of time over. But if you look at some of the Premier clubs, there are some players that are getting, you know, week in, week out, it's really hard on their bodies, you know, and they're getting hammered. Then they're going to internationals and they're getting burnout, and we're going to see players leaving the game early. But then we've also got in the same clubs players doing nothing, you know, and they're retiring at 25, not because they're injured, but because they can't either get a contract somewhere or they're not getting any games. So we've got that. We've still got those things that we're overcoming as a new professional sport. And it is only 20 years old. And I still think that's quite new. And so there'll be players like that might be another strand that they can do that, and they can do seven. So I think, you know, and ultimately, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But if you don't try it, you don't know. And
well, there are T20 specialist players, aren't there? Who just go around the world from each T20 competition.
Just playing, starting up 15s in a school is difficult. You know, it requires a lot of facility and organisation. Actually, sevens as a start-up isn't that straightforward because it's so knackering to play over a full pitch. You know, it's and long passing, and it puts your skills under pressure. As an actual entry point sport, sevens isn't necessarily the best thing. So you need to find these other opportunities. So you know, it might not work, but you know, we're prepared to give it a go, and the signs are reasonably positive at the moment.
Listening to Ben speak then, I'm just taken back to a conversation I had on the touchline of watching my boys play football with a friend of mine who's a PE teacher, about why a PE teacher at a state school, about how hard it is to get rugby into schools because, as you just said, it's a complicated program to put in place. There are kids who've never been schooled in rugby, they don't understand the game, and that actually it strikes me as that could be a real benefit. That idea of a simplified version of a game, five-a-side, that you could play in PE lessons seems like an entry point that could really work in state schools. And I know that a friend of mine who's a teacher he can't bring rugby into a school, but I think but this is, as a game you could play in, you know, within a PE lesson.
Yeah, 100%. Really, and you know, and in confined space. And we have to point out that World Rugby have given us this go ahead on a test basis for the first year. So, you know, after this event in the O2, they're going to make a call on it, whether we can run it again. And, you know, speaking to Brett a couple of days ago, there's no reason why they'll say no to that. But they're rightly being cautious. You don't want suddenly people coming in and making these radical changes and then allowing them to run free. So we've worked every step along the way with World Rugby. But yeah.
Well, listen, I say good luck to you. New form of rugby that brings new people to the game, that makes it fun for people who might not have played the game otherwise. Seems to me only like it would be a good thing at this stage. Right, listen, we don't normally have notices to read out, but we're such a big podcast now that I have got a notice today. Wayne Barnes was on this podcast a couple of weeks ago, and he is running his annual charity game, which we want to give a big up to because it is raising funds for Breast Cancer Now. This coming Sunday at Lydney RFC, you can go and watch the Forest of Dean Combination 15 against a star-studded Wayne Barnes 15, which is being coached by Eddie Jones. Eddie Jones has not been on a great run recently, so you know, maybe get a win on that one. Okay, enough of that.
15 members of the Wayne Barnes team have to have beards. Is that part of the prerequisite of playing? Because that would completely throw Eddie. He just won't know what's going on. It's just not part of his makeup.
You should ask
to deal
that,
with that.
But the information I've been given says there's food, fun, and an auction, but nothing about beards. But anyway, we'll find out about that. Right, we're now going to wrap up with the weekly final feature, God and Goddess of the Week. Has anyone got a nomination they would like to throw in? Yes. Go on, Chris. It's got to involve a cringy nickname, by the way.
Okay, yeah, okay. Well, it involves former Wales back rower Nathan Thomas, known to his mates probably as Nath.
But, well done.
Whose team were trailing 23-20 against Oakdale in their big final, the National Bowl final. And the time was up, so the players thought, but they were awarded a penalty. So Nathan went, all right, ref, and said, how long have we got? And he said, well, you've got one play. So they opted for a scrum and scored in the right-hand corner and won the title. They could have gone for the 3 points and shared the cup, but Nathan and the boys from Abergavenny said, no, thank you very much. We want the glory. And they got it. What a god.
That is a great nomination. Is that Nathan Thomas, who must be about 57 now?
Well, you go and tell him that then.
No, but
I tell you what, he's looking very big.
He was the one who won the European Cup with Bath.
And he's now won the National Bowl.
What year was that? 98.
Yeah.
So that's a magnificent nomination.
So he's there.
But he is old. He's older than you, I think.
Well, we're getting ageist now.
No, we love him. We love him for that. Alex?
I think that's a great nomination. I was going to pick Francois Hugard, not only for his performance, but he talked about Lima Sopawanga's social media, but I discovered at Six Ways, belatedly, that Hugard's Instagram is a very entertaining follow, full of, he seems to live a completely different existence to anyone else who lives in that part of the world with his blacked out motors and bling. So I found that entertaining, so I'm going to go with Hugard.
I mean, for different reasons, well, half the same. It's Hoegaard as well for me. I just thought he was outstanding at the weekend. He's just brilliant. So that would be it. And obviously, like in the Championship, it was disappointing to see my local club Richmond go down, but they had a terrific win against London Scottish in their final game of the season. And it's a shame that how that's worked out, really, with Hartbury having all sorts of ringers coming in to survive in that league, and then Richmond. Richmond relying on their part-timers.
Taking down people as you walk out of the studio.
I like Hartbury as well, but I just think... And they did everything within the regulations, but still, I thought that was a little bit unfair. And obviously, congratulations to Norwich. It'd be great to see them back. Although, again, I'm not so pleased they're going to be eventually back at Brentford at the new stadium, because as a season ticket holder at the Bees, I really would like a nice, firm field. I don't want rugby players stomping all over it.
Can I just add one more nickname? Tommy, as in Tommy Turner, and the Tongan masses at Amtel who've got themselves into the Championship. Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, that's
great story.
That is
absolutely
and
great
can
story.
You tell people who
All
Tommy
over
is.
The Pacific Islands, they are now wearing Amtel shirts. It's absolutely fantastic. It is a great story. It really is.
And who is Tommy Turner?
Paul Turner, former Wales outside half. He's coached everybody, and he's now a director of rugby at the new Championship club. Ben, yeah. You must have played against him, didn't you?
Tom, he coached me at Bedford.
It's Tom, he's Tom to him, it's Tommy to me.
Tommy Turner.
Yeah. No, it is extraordinary. Amtel do not look anything like a Championship club, and they haven't even got a stand on their ground. An achievement, that's for sure. I think God of the Week goes to your friend Nath, Chris. Well done there.
Yeah, all right, bud.
Thanks very much, Ben, Alex, Chris. This was The Ruck. Back again next week, please. Come back again. Thanks for listening, and see you then. Bye.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility, there's more to iPhone.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.